Welcome to Paw Print Academy, your blueprint to raising better dogs. I am Ryan, your host, alongside my co-host, Brianna.
Hi.
And together we're going to bring you real-world training insights built on leadership, structure, and proven methods. This show's more about, this show's a lot more than just teaching your dog to sit or stay. And it's about building trust, creating calm, and becoming the kind of leader that your dog truly needs. So thanks for being here with us on this journey. And let's get started. So today is episode 3, and it is the power of consistency and why routines matter more than just pure talent. When we talk about that, our core idea behind this concept is that dogs do not need perfect training sessions. They need consistent leadership. So reliability in those routines builds trust a lot more and creates those long-term results more than just like the talent or like your special techniques. Regardless of the way that you're going to go about your dog training, the consistency that you add in makes all the difference, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
And so today in episode 3 of Paw Print Academy, we're going to talk through what type of consistency we're talking about, right? Like what does it mean when, I guess it's easy, it's a simple word, consistency. Yeah, just be consistent. But how is that applied to all the individual tasks that go into training a dog? Because that is where we get confused, sidetracked, and we create confusion for the dog, right? And at the end of the day, clarity when we're training a dog is the name of the game. Without clarity and without the dog understanding what it is that we're even trying to get them to do, man, if you don't have clarity, you don't have any hope.
Right.
Because that dog's just going to look at you. They don't speak English. We've said it before. We'll say it again. I say it all the times. And everybody laughs and like shakes their head. Oh, right. Yeah. Dogs don't speak English. Mm-hmm. Right. They really don't.
Yeah.
So you keep telling it to do things that you never taught it. And then we're like, man, this dog is a problem. It just doesn't want to listen.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't know
like
what
a magic technique.
Right. Yeah. If I just pop the leash or if I do a circle or if I use the right collar or the right harness or the right tool or I use the right clicker, then it's all just going to kind of fall into place. Mm-hmm. But really, if you want to single out one specific topic that you just got to nail, it's just consistency.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to break that down. So as you may have seen in previous episodes, by the time you guys actually download this, we're about 3 episodes ahead of where the podcasts are being released. But the in previous podcasts, we usually come up with a main core idea. This week is consistency. And then we break it down into 3 like major points with a couple of additional, with a couple of additional little sub points and things thrown in. That builds our discussion. We have our live clients from our training company, Top Dog Training, that are dialed in and they're live on the call as we actually record this. And then we'll break for about 15, 20 minutes at the end and do live Q&A based on what we're talking about. This is like every podcast I'm sure you've ever listened to. It's a work in progress. But what sets ours apart and it makes ours a little bit different is that it is recorded live in one take, from beginning to end with our clients. And then we throw it out there because I don't think that there's anything that really needs to get edited out. It's a very family friendly type of atmosphere. And the goal is to get the information out to increase the education of anyone who wants to, you know, embark on the journey of training their dog. So as we get into that, major point number one, dogs learn through repetition, not exceptions, right? And so That doesn't mean dogs learn through repetition, no exceptions. It means exceptions to that consistency are gravely hampering your dog training. Example, you say you're training your dog to sit and you're doing all the things right. You're like, sit, and they sit, and sit, and they sit. And you're just like, man, this is going so well. This is going so well. And then you say, sit, and then they go down all the way to the ground. And you're like, man, they're just so obedient. It's crazy. And you reward, and then you're just like, move on with your day. And you're like saying sit, and then once in a while, they're going all the way down to the ground. Mm-hmm. You're shooting yourself in the foot.
Why?
Why? I'm glad you asked. Thank you for asking. So you're shooting yourself in the foot because you're reinforcing something with consistency that is not accurate. Mm. Right? And so if you're trying to teach the dog to sit, but sometimes they do a different activity other than sit, and you reward that just because, man, they're doing so good. They're listening, like in your mind, like they're listening to you. They're responding to you. They have good eye contact. They are not barking. They're doing all the things right. It's just that they went down a little too low in the sit and they ended up on the ground. Mm-hmm. But that's still not consistent. That's still not what we're trying to train for. Mm-hmm. And so that is an opportunity for you to simply withhold the reward and just be like, no, sit. And a lot of times they'll pop right back up into that sit, and then you can go on about your day and you reward them and you go all right on. Big party, lots of praise. But that is the consistency that we're talking about.
Yeah.
You have to nail the consistency. And the smartest dogs are the absolute hardest to train because they prey on us on the consistency game, yeah. Right? They are always watching. They're always looking. They're always deducing in their head like, oh, what is he asking for? What is she asking for? Mm-hmm. And when we aren't consistent with something very simple like that, we send them the wrong message.
Right. I always go back to like not even about a training session, right? It's like consistency in everyday life. Like when I deal with a dog, the first thing I teach is threshold manners. It's like, that's so important. Like daily things throughout your life where you're being consistent and feeding the dog at the same time, taking him for a walk around the same time, or at least in the same order. Those are where you're going to see the biggest like behavioral changes in your dog.
Right. Definitely. So inconsistency is going to slow down the learning, and it's going to create hesitation in the dogs because they're not going to fully understand what it is that you're asking. So repetition is obviously going to strengthen a habit. And the whole goal of dog training in general, right, is to eventually get to where your dog is doing those movements and those actions automatically. That's like the end state that we want to get to with our dogs. Mm-hmm.
Right. And repetition, I mean, people will ask us sometimes, well, it's like, how many times do I have them sit in a training session? I'm like 40.
Right.
Because you can do
right.
it
I
so
don't have
fast.
A right. Yeah. I don't have a number. I just keep on going.
Right. You just keep going until the dog understands it. And a lot of times, like there are a lot of things like recall that dogs do not understand right away. And you just have to keep doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it. And you're like, man, I don't know how they don't get it yet, but it doesn't matter that you don't understand that they don't get it. It's your job to teach them that.
Right. And I could see this going off the rails here. It was like, well, they said just do it like 100 times. So we're not saying do it until the dog is exhausted in one single training session. Right. What we're talking about is the repetition that is required to truly like create understanding in the dog.
Right.
That is not the same, and it's going to be different for every dog. Like I said, the there's a very famous dog training company that recommends they do all positive training. They recommend 1 minute sessions, mm-hmm. right? Like I for sure don't follow that. But because, yeah, because that would I be got, wild. I got a, I got too many things to do just a single minute of training and then put the dog away for 5 minutes and then do a single minute of training. We're going to go down a rabbit hole with this, but the concept is repetition at the dog's pace, where the dog is obviously showing comprehension and you're not exhausting the dog. Someone could ask, well, how do I know that I'm exhausting the dog? Well, because the dog's not participating anymore.
Right. If they check out.
Right. If they check out, you've already
get
missed
one
it.
More in and, right. and call it a day.
Right. And next time, cut it a little bit earlier.
Yep.
Because ideally, you're ending at a high, not at a low. Mm-hmm. You want to end every session at a high while the dog's excited, while the dog wants to perform one more.
Yep.
That way, when you get them out the next time for the next session, they're going to be excited. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Aside from that, the last point that I had written down was allowing a behavior can sometimes teach the dog that rules are negotiable rather than strict. Mm-hmm. And this comes into play. I've got some questions here that are going to kind of play into this, but this is where life happens is totally a real excuse. And I feel for you. I get it. I understand it happens to us too, even as dog trainers.
Yeah.
But you come home from a super long day at work and your dog, like, you know, jumps up and then they get down and you're like, all right, that's fine. Like, good job. And you walk into the living room and you're just super tired and you tell them, hey, go to your place. And they kind of walk over to it, but they're real excited and they come up and nudge you. And then you just pet them and you're like, yeah, yeah, I had a rough day too. Like, well, there was an opportunity for you to correct your dog and say, no, no, you didn't go to your place. Mm-hmm. Let me reinforce this. But instead, because we are tired, weak, or otherwise, it's the silver knob.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Brianna's over here messing with her mic, about to rip this thing off the boom. we're going to have technical difficulties on our live call. When you are super tired, you're not in the mood to deal with this, and your dog almost does what you say, is the prime opportunities for you to explain to the dog non-verbally that your commands are negotiable.
Yeah.
And that's the most frustrating thing, because I'm right there with you. I have done it. I still do it sometimes.
Right.
We are not perfect. We all make the mistake. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the more mistakes that you do, the longer it takes to train your dog.
Right. They add up for
yep.
sure.
So one mistake or one time of doing that, it's not going to ruin your dog.
Right.
It absolutely doesn't. But right. your dog becomes a product of what you consistently do and consistently hold them accountable to do.
Right. And it goes back to them being opportunists, right? They look for any kind of loophole. And whether it's just because you're tired at the end of the day, or whether, you know, somebody in the house is the weak link and that is like, yeah, whatever. I don't really care. I don't want to participate in all this stuff or whatever. It's just too hard. I don't have time for it. You will see a difference in that dog, in that household, in that behavior.
Oh yeah, for sure. The first question, what is an example of a client that you've seen who sabotaged progress by being inconsistent? Not naming any names.
Right. I don't know that I would call it sabotage anyway.
Right.
Sometimes people, most
we sabotage of, ourselves.
Right. right? Most of the like, time, they don't even realize that they're doing it mm-hmm. until we're involved. And then we're like, well, that's because you're doing that. And they're like, oh, okay. So right. for me, I immediately go to clients coming home and being excited to see their dog and loving them and letting them like wrestle and do things like that. And then guests coming over and them not wanting to do that with the dog. With that, a lot of times it's like, well, I'm excited to see my dog. I want them to be excited to see me. But that dog isn't going to differentiate you from that other guest walking in the door. They think somebody comes through that door and I get to wrestle with them. Mm. And so I think people think that the dogs will be okay treating guests as such, but treating them differently. And it's just not the case.
Right. So my example is I used to teach this big group class out at a park, and it was done only with clients that had already like been through, their dog had already been through training. They had already been through training. They all knew the right things to do. But as soon as you increased the amount of variables that they were like trying to deal with, i.e. There were other dogs, there was other people, you're talking to them, you're having a conversation with them while they're walking their dogs on a, trying to put them in a strict heel, or you know, other dogs are approaching them and they're trying to like keep their dog's engagement. Suddenly, as soon as the all of those variables increase, all of the consistency just went out the window. And then they were like, good, sit, heel, stay, down. And it was like all of them all at the same time. And it was like, well, my dog's not like lunging at that other dog, but but you were also using five commands to try to get your dog to sit, basically. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, that's not the best. And it's okay, like, but you need to understand that you, the more you talk, the more your dog's just going to tune out what you're saying as noise, because it's confusing.
Yep.
Yeah. How do you show owners the difference in their dog's behavior once they like stick to the rules? I think that one's self-evident.
Right. The dog, right?
shows them. Yeah. I don't need to show them anything. Right. When we get someone on board and they're like, okay, I'm committed, I am going to be absolutely consistent about this. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, whether it's like, I'm going to make them sit at the back door before I open the door, right, or I'm going to make them lay down before I open the crate door.
I will not feed them whipped cream, even if they bark at the fridge.
Right.
There's so many.
Whatever the consistency thing is, they usually get that.
Yeah.
Right. And the dog ends up showing them,
yeah,
hey, I am picking up what you're putting down.
All right. And some dogs have more stamina than others. Keep that in
some
mind
too. Some
dogs
can be incredibly persistent.
I mean, we do like decompression exercises with dogs, and some dogs in like 20 minutes are like, I'm gonna lay down. There's nothing going on. Some dogs it's 2 hours.
Right.
And if they don't think I have to move on with my day and do something different, I do, but I don't get to move on from that exercise because my job is to wait for them to settle down.
What's one daily routine that you just don't let slide no matter what?
Threshold manners.
I love that you
say it louder for the people in the back. Threshold manners.
Okay, why?
Because a dog rushing through the door is one, it's just rude. Okay. In what world do we just let our kids run out the front door ahead of us? Especially if you live like on a like street. We're obviously like in like a cul-de-sac, so it's different. But it is just one of those things where if that dog rushes out that door without you, that dog is not going with you. That dog is ahead of you. That dog is not paying any attention to you. That dog is in its own universe, in its own world, and you are not in pack drive. And right, that's the thing, is when you take your dog outside, you need to be in pack drive with your dog, or guess what? Your dog doesn't care and it will run away.
Right. Because it's going to be in something else.
Right. It's going to be in prey drive. So it's going to be chasing something.
Yeah.
It's going to be in play drive. It's going to be chasing something.
Right. It's like, let's go do something else.
Yeah. That's like the first thing we work on a dog with when they come in, is just, you just have to sit at the door. And then when I open it, you have to not go through it until I'm ready to go through it with you.
Yeah.
And it's so easy.
Right. My thing, I mean, similar to threshold manners, but when I get a dog out of a crate or a kennel,
right, it's
like, if I don't tell them, if I don't give them a break,
yeah,
then they're not coming out.
Right. Yeah.
They can be sitting, standing, you know, laying down. It doesn't matter, but they're not coming out until I say break.
Right. And so that's also... at the crate door is one of the first ways that we teach like the no marker without having to give any like corrections or anything like that, because you're just taking space away and saying, right. Nope, you can't come out. You have to sit down.
Right. Very, very clear in the dog's mind.
Yeah.
What no means right. when it is literally limiting their freedom.
Yeah. And then and you see just, within minutes, the dog's like, oh, okay, I got
to
right. sit down.
You don't have to slam anything in a dog's face either. You right. can literally just hold the crate door right where it is. And that dog is not coming. It's not going to dig its way through there.
Right. So, anywhere from like the Dutch Shepherd that's 80 pounds, he has right? to lay down before he comes out.
100%.
And the 15 pound little Frenchie also. You're going to lay down before you get to
She wishes out. She was 15 pounds.
Well, all right, she's 18. Don't hate on her.
all right. The right. These are both our dogs, by the way. We don't. These are both our personal dogs.
We only
dogs.
Make fun of our dogs.
Right, exactly. So point number two, structure creates predictability and calmness. So this is like really, really important. So when your dog is showing signs of anxiety, the number one thing that I talk to people on the phone when they ask for evals and they ask us to like come into their house and figure out what's going on with their dog. And they're like, I think they're anxious. And I'm like, okay, tell me about how your day goes and tell me about how you feed them. Tell me about where do they sleep and how do they sleep and tell me about this and tell me about that. Almost always the dog has way more freedom than they need. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, you get anxiety because the dog lacks structure that it just genetically craves. Dogs were meant to be in packs. Mm-hmm. And like whole generations previous, right? Dogs were bred and, you know, they came from this world where they survived in packs. They don't need solo absolute freedom and to make decisions. Not all dogs are capable of making decisions. Not all dogs want to be the dog to make the decisions. Thus, they don't challenge the alpha male in the pack that is making the decisions. That's how a pack, like a pack dynamic, stays structured in the wild, is that not every dog actually wants to challenge the alpha, not just from a like a physical dominance perspective, but a lot of dogs just don't want to have to make those decisions.
Right. Gabe's like, I'm not
right. He doesn't want to make any decisions. He's just like, what are we doing? Right, we're doing
somebody,
this. Yeah. Somebody
tell me where
somebody
we're
tell
going.
Me where we're
What's
going.
Going on?
Absolutely. So dogs feel like security when they know what's coming next, mm-hmm. and they can't know what's coming next if you aren't consistent about your schedule or your process. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be consistent to a T with scheduling, right? So like I'm a huge proponent of not feeding my dog at the same time every day. And that comes from the concept that if you feed your dog at 7 o'clock every day, at 7:02, your dog is going to, depending on how dominant they are, they're going to be finding you.
Yeah.
And they're going to be
where
like,
where are you?
Where are you? And where's why have food? I not eaten yet? I feed our dogs at different times throughout the evening. That's not the consistency that I'm talking about. The consistency I'm talking about is if I ask them to do something, I am going to hold them accountable and enforce that they do it. And that is how they predict, okay, he said sit. Okay, he said place. I need to go lay down on my place. Mm-hmm. That's how it's done.
Yep.
All right. The first question on this point, how do you help families build a realistic daily routine without going crazy overboard with it?
Right. Definitely you got to start small and pick like two or three things, right? So mine would be start having your dog like sit at the door. It's like teach a threshold manner that builds consistency. You'll see after you practice that and make it a routine and require it every time that when you get to a door, your dog's going to be like, oh, I should sit down. I'm at a door. And those are the dogs that people look at in public and they're like, oh my gosh, that dog sat at a door. And it's just so different. And then I would go back to like feeding also. Does it have to be the exact same time? No. Will it maybe help you build consistency to kind of start at the same time? Yeah, maybe. But it's not a requirement by any means. I mean, we usually pick like a time range between like 5:30 and 7, and we'll feed our dog somewhere between there. But at least building a routine where they have to go to their place, they have to sit, and then you have to deliver the food and give them a release command before they get to eat dinner, instead of just dumping it in the bowl while they're not even around and waiting for them to meander over and eat it at their free will.
Yeah. And I think that those are great ones to start with, because without changing anything in your entire life, you still have to let that dog out and you still have to feed it.
Yep.
Right. Those two are pretty much non-negotiable, across the dog, like pet dog, home dog training space.
Yeah.
And so by capitalizing on those things that you already have to do those things. You have to let the dog out. You already have to feed the dog. Mm-hmm. So just take those opportunities to start building in that structure.
Yeah.
Maybe even as simple as like you said, like, okay, so just because you put the food down doesn't mean your dog gets to eat. Maybe you give them a release word in order to eat. Maybe you then start to require a sit before it. Maybe you require a sit and then a down. Mm-hmm. Maybe you require a cool trick of some sort, like a spin or an orbit or whatever.
But when it comes back to the consistency, it's the dog then has to do it and do it the right way in order for that to work. Because if you have the dog sit and you're wanting them to wait until you give them a release word, because you don't want them to release themselves at every moment, that dog goes to break without you telling it, then it's nope. You have to be ready to block that dog, put them back into the position and require it again.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And wait. I mean, it might take four, five, six, seven, eight times.
Right. So you have to prepare yourself that the first time that you do this, and probably the second and third time, it's going to take a little bit, and that's okay. You can work through it.
Right. You have to come into it with patience and time.
Patience.
Patience is the hardest thing, because it's like, nope, don't do that. Nope. Right.
I don't have time for this. Nope, hurry up. Eat your food. I got to go.
Right. You're like a broken record, and it is not fun in the beginning, but you will see that the dog learns faster and is like, well, I should go ahead and do it the first time, because last time she just kept making me do it. And it took so long that I didn't even remember that I wanted those snacks.
Yeah. So can you share a story where structure alone reduced a dog's anxiety? Now, I'm sending you that question specifically because some people listening may have heard about Brianna's rescue dog, Mr. Gabe. And it's just Gabe, I know.
But yeah, it is just
Gabe. I call him Mr.
Gabe.
Did
not come with the first name, Mr.
It's just polite. Polite to address people. So he was so anxiety ridden that he could not walk through like a doorway. He couldn't walk through a doorway because he could see the trim going from the ground up and over him. Mm-hmm. And he wanted no part in that, right? And you have to literally either like drag, herd, push, or just somehow distract him just in order to go from room to room. And he is able now to run and play with the other dogs in the backyard, right? He runs on a treadmill.
Yeah. He put a ball in his mouth the other day for the first time I've ever seen.
Never been taught how to play like a dog.
He just doesn't know.
But he is learning, right? And he is figuring these things out. He's able to go out in public now. Yeah. He goes to breweries and he goes to coffee shops and he goes to things. And sometimes he still gets spooked and gets scared and things. Yeah. But he's able to do those things. What one of the most major changes that I saw, and I'm basically just taking your entire point here.
You're fine.
was at the point where we introduced him to a kennel or a crate, I felt like that was a defining moment where he was like, oh, heck no, I am not getting in that crate.
Yeah, you're not putting me in a box.
I would never, I would rather die than get in that box. And through patience and food luring and getting him close to it with the salmon, freeze-dried salmon, and getting him close to it, building food drive in him because he didn't have food drive.
Right.
He would just leave his food all day.
Yeah.
But building food drive in him and then building that response in him and that trust in him and then basically just creating a safer and safer and safer environment until eventually he was like, no, please put me in the crate. Yeah. Like there's something scary out here, but I know in there it's safe and it's good.
Mm-hmm.
So let me go in there.
Yep.
And at that point, that dog completely changed around.
Yeah. He's the epitome though of like, if you don't go into it with patience, you will lose your mind because he's one that's like, he's just.
Right. Because he's not thinking through anything. He's like reacting. Deer. He is straight reacting out of fear, out of anxiety, out of the pure animalistic like thought processes that he has.
Yeah.
But he's not like participating in this exchange.
Yeah.
He's just like, ah.
Yep.
Constantly.
Yeah. And I think like going back to the consistency, like we went with an e-collar on him because it gives consistent corrections. It's the same every time. And he knows what to predict when you go, nope. And he's like, oh, okay, all right, I'm listening. What was it again? Because the music was too loud the first time. But he hears that no now, and he's like, what? Sorry, okay.
Right. So major point number three, consistency builds trust between dog and owner. So trust comes from fairness and predictability, not just from like being the best trainer in the room. It doesn't matter what cool tricks you have. It doesn't matter what cool concepts you have. What matters is that you build that consistency. And with the consistency, your dog develops trust in you. So dogs respect leaders, right? And a leader is someone who stays in the front of the pack and helps everyone else like move toward the common goal. Not just somebody who gets behind them and pushes them forward. Sometimes things, people, dogs will require a push forward, but that's not usually where a leader stands. Anyway, dogs respect leaders who respond the same way every time. Mm-hmm. This is what Brianna is talking about with an e-collar at an extremely low setting. You can develop a communication with the dog that is always exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
That consistency builds fairness. That fairness is highly ethical. The concept of, I would much rather use a very low, like, e-stim or a vibrate function on an e-collar than having to perfectly meter the tightness on the leash.
Right. So one of the things with Gabe is because he darts and gets spooked and will go into flight every chance he gets, he would a lot of times muddy the communication because he's giving himself corrections because he's just darting back and forth at the end of the leash. And I'm not even asking for anything at that point.
Right. And so when you're dealing with a scared dog like that, a lot of times there's a lot of trainers out there that will just use some sort of aversive to just kind of stomp out that behavior and be like, no, don't do that. Do this. But the problem is that he's initiating a lot of that so skittishly and so unpredictably that you're not really getting through with a consistent, clear message. And so in that case, putting him on like a big, thick, flat collar that dulls down all of those, all of that crazy information and keeps him from getting his own corrections and then clearly delivering corrections yourself, which is the, which when we're saying corrections, we're saying at the point where he is doing a behavior, we're delivering communication to him that says, hey, look at me. Hey, that's not so scary. Look at me. Give me your focus rather than whatever it is that he's worried about. Mm-hmm. That is clear. And that's clear and concise communication.
Yeah.
Inconsistent praise. So and we just kind of talked about this as a real life example, but an inconsistent correction will for sure set your dog back.
Yeah.
Inconsistent corrections where sometimes like, oh, well, my trainer told me to just pop the leash. Okay. Well, how much did you pop the leash? Mm-hmm. Well, I popped the leash, but at the same time, the dog like took off that way and did this and did that. Like we were just talking about, right? Mm-hmm. With the dog is constantly changing that up for you and you can't deliver consistency. Oh, we need to look at that strategy.
Right. Cause yeah, you're going to end up, if you're inconsistent with corrections and rewards, that's when you're going to lose trust from the dog, like yeah. Entirely.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I know I like sound like a broken record over here. Consistency is the name of the game, but it really is like all of the things that we do and everything that we recommend, it aligns with and supports the concept that is this a way you can be consistent in your communication with your dog? If the answer is no, it's probably not something we recommend. Mm-hmm. That's the end of it.
Yeah.
All right. So fair, consistent responses give the dog confidence in its choices. Mm-hmm. By us consistently rewarding the dog, the other side of it, right? We just talked about the fair corrections, but right. The other side of it, by rewarding the dog consistently, by nailing it, when they do what you ask, nail it, throw a party, like mark it. We talked last week about marker words and we talked for almost an hour on marker words. Go back. If you can't remember and you don't understand like what the difference is, go back and listen to it because that marker words give you the opportunity to mark the exact moment that the dog's doing what you're saying for them to do. And that is what you want to reward by doing it and doing it consistently, man, you are going to make so much progress so quickly.
Right. And that's why we always use the phrase like, yes, predicts a reward.
Right.
No, predicts a correction.
Correct.
Because you can then see a dog responding to those words before you even have to get to anything the next. That's how you phase
right,
out
because it predicts it. And so,
right.
Yeah, 100%. I think I cut you off a little bit on that one. I got too excited. I was like, yes, exactly. That's it. Right. It predicts what is coming and the dog will inevitably learn that they will inevitably learn that. What am I trying to say? That they will get to the end faster if they do the behavior faster. So instead of them waiting for you to get the reward out, you'll start seeing in their body language that like they're already expecting it, right? Because they're like, oh, I know he said the marker word. And so they're like, that predicts the reward. I know it's mm-hmm. coming. And they see, you see it in their body language. That's how you know that you have properly like charged that marker.
Right. And if you're not going to at least be that consistent, your dog's not going to trust you. It's just right, like humans, yeah. Right? If like we,
because we talked about not lying to the dog.
Right. Right. If we can't as humans rely on someone, we're not going to trust them.
Right.
So why should your dog rely on you if you're not reliable?
Right. If you tell me there's pizza in the kitchen and like usually there's pizza in the kitchen when you say that, but sometimes there's not. I'm for sure going to doubt you.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's just simple, but we do it all the time with the marker words. We're like, yes means I'm going to give you a reward. And then you're like, yes, 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 yes. And then one time you're like, yes. And then something distracts you and you don't give them a reward. Mm-hmm. You just broke the pattern, mm-hmm. right? You were just not consistent. And I guarantee you that dog that's like laying there with tail wagging, like, yeah, yeah, I'm mm-hmm. going to get paid. I'm going to get paid. Right. And then it's like, ah, what happened?
Right. Now, nobody one works time, for free.
Right? No one works for free around here. but your dog might not change anything just once.
Right.
Or twice or three times or five times.
Right.
Right? Because as long as you're building that consistency up with the teeter totter and it's like in favor of you do this more than you don't.
Yeah.
You're going to be okay. But you are for sure going to elongate mm-hmm. the amount of time you're going to have to work on this
yeah.
for your dog to figure it out. It's not that like, oh, you were inconsistent four times last month, and so now your dog is untrained. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way. But the more you are consistent, the faster they will learn.
Yeah.
All right. So we are going to go into listener projects. So every episode, we come up with two projects for our listeners. Obviously, we've got our real life clients on the line. We'll talk to them in just a second. But for anyone who's downloading this or listening to it after the fact, here's the two projects I have for today. So one is a leash walking consistency drill. So step one, right? Pick one leash rule for the walk, whatever it is, such as, hey, like the dog is not going to walk in front of my leg if they're on the right or on the left. It's like my left leg is going to be the line in the sand. They're not going to walk in front of that. And then enforce it on every single walk, even if you're only going outside briefly, even if you don't leave your driveway, mm-hmm. right? But pick something and pick something that's manageable for where your dog's at. It doesn't make sense for a dog that's a crazy puller. You've got it in a harness. It doesn't listen at all. And then you're going to go outside and you're not going to let it go in front of your leg. That's unrealistic.
Right.
But it could just be like, I'm going to take my dog out. I've never done this before ever, but I'm going to just stop intermittently. And when the dog turns around and looks at me, I'm going to reward it. And you just do it the entire time.
Right. That's my favorite one. I'll walk and I'll stop walking and the dog will inevitably get to the end of the leash eventually. And then I just wait for them to respond to the leash pressure and yeah. look back at me. And then I'm like, yeah. And then I have a reward ready for him.
Yep. So depending on what you pick there, just if the dog breaks the rule, just reset it calmly. Just put it back. Like, nope. Put it back where it's supposed to be and then continue going on. Don't make exceptions. Don't let the dog slide through the drill. Project number two.
Excuse me.
Project number two, feeding time routine. So pick a time that you want to feed the dog, right? And each day for the week, feed them at that time. And at that time, set it up exactly the same way. So same mat, same bowl, same amount of food, same type of food, whatever it is. Set it up the exact same way and require a sit or a down before you lower the bowl. And then as you lower it, I want you to use your marker word that means good job, keep doing it. Whatever it is you're using. We use yes as a continuation marker. We use free as a terminal marker. If you don't know what those mean, refer back to our episode 2. We talked about marker words. But use your continuation marker word to get the dog to continue to do it all the way until you put the bowl down. Then release the dog with your release marker. If that, for us, that's free. We use free, which is a treatable release marker. We use free because the food is the treat. The food is the reward. They get to then eat the reward. and I put the bowl just slightly in front of the dog to where they have to close the distance from wherever they are. They've got to close that distance in order to come to me. Keep the process identical, right? Every single time that you do it to build that predictability. All right. So those are the two listener projects for this week. At this time, we are going to open it up for questions from our live listeners. So at this time, anybody who is listening and or dialed in here, you can unmute and we'll work through whoever's got a question. I'll give you a minute to do that.
Hey, Ryan, it's Heidi Clark.
Hey, Heidi.
Hey, I have a question. When Maverick has something that he shouldn't, like a remote control or something.
Just something. Yeah, just something.
Yes, just something.
I got it.
What is the best way to get him to release it? Because obviously once you go towards him, he then thinks it's a game.
Gotcha. All right. You want to take this one? You know? All right. So there's a couple of things that we have to do. So Maverick, right, is still sitting in his kind of like untrained little bubble here, right? Maverick's coming to our program here pretty soon. So we don't have a strong like recall or a strong drop it or leave it yet that we can like rely on. So what I would recommend with him is a trade, as well as a redirect. Okay. So, and the way that that's going to go down. So is there something that you can trade him that he finds valuable?
Other than a treat or a...
Right. So initially, right now, we can still use a treat, and the treat doesn't necessarily, depending on how we do this, and I'll talk you through it, we don't just treat the dog for going and grabbing the remote, okay? What you can do is you can go and you can get the treats, you can get a toy, you can get something, right? And you can make that situation through movement, tone of voice, and the fact that you have access to that resource more exciting than the remote. Because it's likely that he's grabbing that remote as a precursor to engage with you in a way that like he was looking for attention, right? Or he was looking for you to start a game. One of dog's favorite games right off the bat is Catch Me If You Can. Every dog seems to know how to play it.
Absolutely correct.
Right. Every dog knows how to play Catch Me If You Can, and every dog loves it.
Right. Preloaded with that game.
They come right from the factory that way. So when that happens, the number one thing is you cannot play that game.
Yep.
Right. You cannot play that game. And one of our clients was dealing with some very sensitive items like eyeglasses and things that were getting like mangled in the process. And it could be excruciating to be in the position where you have to deal with this. And I understand. However, every time that you engage with this exciting Catch Me If You Can game, you will reinforce his desire to either get that item or find something else that you also find valuable. So he's looking for what you find valuable. And obviously a remote control where there's only one of them in the house is a very valuable item. And so him identifying that, like, it speaks to his one, opportunistic nature. Mm-hmm. So controlling that resource and obviously trying to size down the amount of times that he can take off with it is important. But once he does get it, I would get some food out, and then I would engage him in that same type of game that is just like, Oh, well, you basically want to explain to him non-verbally, oh, you think I'm interested in that? I'm actually not. I'm way more interested in this thing over here.
Yeah.
And by doing that, what he's looking for initially was your engagement. So you're going to lower the value of that remote control, and you're going to increase the value of whatever it is that you have, that toy, that treat, the food, the stuffed toy, the whatever it is that he is going to then see and perceive as more valuable. And then you do a trade.
But he only does this when you're not around or not looking.
So what does that mean? So like he just grabs the remote when you're not in the house, when you're not around?
Correct.
Okay.
If we don't have everything put up when we're out of his sight.
Yeah.
Then he'll go find something to chew on. But it'll be
so it's a chewing issue.
On the counter with us in the house, and he'll just look at it and just walk on by it.
Okay. So with that, I mean, it comes down to if the dog is young enough and we give them access to just free roam, they're going to find something, right? So I know since he hasn't started his program, right, my general suggestion would be like, put them on place and give them something to chew on. Because how old is Maverick again?
He's 14 months.
Right. So still like in that chewing phase, and I'm sure there's some desire there to chew. So typically I work with a dog and I will put them on place, especially if I'm leaving the room, work them through those situations and give them something that's acceptable to chew on. If they go to get off their placebed with that item, I put that chewable item back on their placebed so that they know that that's where it's acceptable to have it and kind of chew on it. But in those instances, since he doesn't have the training capabilities currently, we've got to make sure that the items are up and out of their reach if they're just free roaming around. And I know that one's like a tough one because, I mean, we don't leave any of our dogs alone in rooms unless they're on place and holding that place. And if they don't hold place well because they're new to it or they're too young, then they go in a kennel if we leave the room. Just because there's so many different crazy things that can happen when dogs just roam around and find something that they like.
So once he gets it, then, and you realize it, then you can do the strategy that I was talking about. Before he gets it, you should use the strategy Brianna's talking about.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Anybody else have a question? Nope. We need to. I'm seriously gonna invest in the Jeopardy music. Waiting for questions.
It's hard to like unmute. I always
right. I know it's right. Someone's like desperately clicking on their laptop right now, trying to get unmuted. All right. Well, unless anybody speaks up, I'm going to close it out here for tonight. Okay. So thank you for joining us for tonight. This was episode 3 of Paw Print Academy. And today we are talking about consistency. Anything that you do with your dogs, it really, really, really comes down to what you consistently do, how you show that baseline, like foundational leadership in the home. With that, I'm gonna bid you guys good night. This is Ryan and my co-host Brianna.
Good night.
Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you a little further down the road. Thanks guys for tuning in. Good night.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.